The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Soviet Russia with Oblak Shoe.
Welcome to Panel to Screen. I'm Bo.
And I am Boris.
Oh my gosh. That's Bell. That's Russian. That's a Russian. It's a Russian Bell is what it
in
is.
In Russia, I am known as Boris the Bear Man.
Man, yeah, that's right. It's Panel to Screen, the most unnecessary show on the internet. That's right. It's two guys talking about movies, talking about comic books, talking about comic book movies. And while the rest of the world is debating whether or not Suicide Squad should be getting the low ratings that it is actively getting, and every single YouTuber, podcaster, and commentator in the geek world is talking nothing but Suicide Squad, or possibly What If, we are out here doing the work. I'm talking about Black Widow. Why? Because we're super late to the game, and that's how we've always been.
In Soviet Russia, game is late to you.
Oh, why did it? Seriously, though, why on earth did it take us this long to do it? I mean, I know we had a whole other TV show that we kind of, you know, primarily focus on, but still, I mean, Bell.
I saw it in theaters. This is the first movie I'd seen in theaters in like a year.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. So I still have not returned back to the theaters. I'm thinking Shang-Chi will probably end up being the one that brings me back in full. But no, I ponied up the dollars and I actually did the whole Disney Plus premium situation. People were giving me a hard time for it. They were saying like, oh, Mr. Moneybags over here, you know, getting his Disney Plus situation. And I was like, you know, I mean, if you calculate in, especially for like somebody with kids, you got childcare, you got food, you got drinks, you know, you buying tickets for you and the Mrs. It's a whole, like, it is your date night for that week. All in all, the Disney Plus purchase was actually cheaper than going to the movie theaters. And I love going to the movie theaters. I am pro movie theaters. But, you know, we're trying to be smart out here with the dollars and the COVID and whatnot.
I have factual evidence to support your claim. So I took, it was me, my wife, Christy, and my mother-in-law, Julie. We took her, you know, kind of get her out of the house. She likes Marvel movies and stuff, yeah, too. So we took her, and all in all, it was like well over $100 between food, tickets, all of that stuff. And we could have just paid $30. I mean, I love my home theater. I really, really do. And it's fantastic. And like in situations where there is an added $30 bonus in those situations, I mean, honestly, I mean, yes, it is more expensive, but like if there is an extra charge, I'm probably just gonna go to the theater anyway. Because if I'm going to spend money to go see a movie, I'd rather it go to support the theater. And, you know, I have friends who work in the theater and like the people who work there and things like that. If it's like Suicide Squad, I was going to go to the theater to watch, but it was free on HBO Max. You didn't have to pay extra for it. And COVID had kind of reared its ugly head back again in Texas. And so there was,
Yeah.
And so that's kind of why we went to Black Widow. Everything was kind of calming down. Everything was seeming kind of normal. So we went there, and that's what worries me about Shang-Chi is that like, I think it's going to be theater only because, you know, Disney's getting a lot of hot water. And,
are we going to talk about that? Yeah, are we going to talk about that?
We're starting it off. So,
okay. Yeah. All right, Belle, bring the tea. What's up? which side are you on? Are you team Disney or are you team ScarJo?
Team ScarJo all the way.
Yeah, I mean, look, it makes sense. I think a lot of the legal jargon that has been used in a lot of the PR stuff has not helped anybody's case in any of this. But I mean, like, just from a, you know, just from a common sense narrative here. Yeah. I mean, like, they should have renegotiated contracts at the very least.
Yeah, like that's the issue here. I don't care, you know, and like Disney's trying to like smear and say, oh, she already made $20 million. That doesn't matter. None of that matters.
It does not. You're exactly
what,
right.
The important thing here is they had a contract. They didn't renegotiate that contract and they just did what they wanted regardless. Now, everybody's like, oh, she doesn't need the money, but I don't care. Like, that doesn't matter, because think of all the people in Hollywood who work on these movies who may have had similar contracts, who don't have the star power or the money or the lawyers or whatever to take on Disney.
Right. And so, and like, especially, you know, at a moment where this is an industry changing moment.
Yes.
So yeah, hopefully things work out. It does seem very specifically between ScarJo and Disney. It's not ScarJo versus Marvel, so to speak, right? Like, it's Disney.
Yeah, because, you know, and that's the thing, is this is contract law. They broke their contract. They are 100% in the wrong.
And that is coming specifically from Bell's legal expertise.
Look, I've read the contract, see? I had my people on it from day one. ScarJo reached out to me and she said, hey, Bell, I need your help on a contract matter. I don't know why she sounds like me, but she does.
Well, fair enough. All right. Well, we're not here necessarily to talk about all the legal ramifications, but I mean, all things considered, you can't not acknowledge the fact that that's been a thing. But no, we are here to talk about the movie that was Black Widow, a film that many would argue, I would say correctly, came out far, far too late. And I'm not talking because of the delays because of COVID. I am talking about in terms of now, as opposed to 3 to 4 years from now, or rather in the past. Not the future. From now is in the future. You know, the past. Anyway, point is, this movie should have come out where it fits in the timeline, honestly. And the fact that it didn't come out back then is kind of ridiculous. But so we'll get into it, I'm sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, might as well just talk about it now.
I mean, let's do it. Go ahead.
So I'd heard, and granted, I don't know how substantiated these claims and rumors are, but there's a particular producer who used to work at Marvel before Kevin Feige was like the head honcho there. And his whole thing, and the reason why we didn't see Black Panther, we didn't see Black Widow, we didn't see, you know, a lot of these movies that elevate women and POCs, was at the very beginning in Marvel, there was another guy at the head who was kind of like, nobody wants to see black people and women in starring roles in comic book films.
Look, we swapped out Rhodey and no one noticed. Nah.
Well, I mean, that was more Terrence Howard being like, I want more money, and Disney being like, no.
Right. Well, I mean, there's other factors, but still, yeah, please continue.
But still, yeah. And like, it was this guy's kind of like, you know, he was the head honcho there. He was making those calls. He was like, nobody wants to see those either. I don't. And I'm not speaking on his behalf. I don't know what his reasoning for that was.
You don't even know his name.
I knew it at one point and I forgot. Right. But if you Google guy at Marvel who didn't want women and POC, you know, starring Marvel comic book movies, you'll find him. It was a guy before Kevin Feige. And at least that's the situation that I had heard. That's why Black Widow, a Black Widow movie, even though she had been a character since Iron Man 2, you know, the second movie in Marvel's MCU.
Right.
She didn't get a movie of her own until after Phase 4.
Yeah, second Avenger to ever be introduced, right?
Yeah, second Avenger. Mm-hmm.
I guess Hulk.
Hawkeye.
No, not Hawkeye, because didn't Iron Man 2 came out before Thor? So she would have been the third, because Hulk technically, I always forget about the Incredible Hulk.
I always forget about it too, because it's a Paramount movie, and so it never shows up on Disney Plus, and I always forget about, like, it was even Edward Norton.
Edward Norton for Mark Ruffalo, and no one noticed.
Nobody even noticed that. Ruffalo, that's a foreign sounding name. That'll appease the, you know, the PC folks. I'm sure that's exactly what he was thinking, but
sure, right? Because that makes sense. Oh, man. All right. So, yes, one way or the other, it took forever for this movie to become a thing. And, man, I would argue to its detriment that it took forever, because I think this is a really solid movie for the time that it was supposed to come out. But it does feel a little what's the word here? Like, all right, looking at it solely as a film, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was, you know, the super spy narrative is fun. We saw that a little bit with Winter Soldier. This kind of takes it on a little bit of a
international level, if you will.
How you'll say spy thriller? I don't know.
And it was a lot of fun. It was cool getting her backstory. We got introduced to a lot of fun characters that we're going to talk about. Even the thing that people kind of complain about, And it's never really bothered me one way or the other, but I've seen... So, Belle, you know there's this thing they do with, like, prequels, where it's like, here's the origin of that thing that you recognize. For example, Han Solo's dice from the Millennium Falcon in Solo.
I couldn't sleep until I knew how Han got his dice. And, like, my life was in shambles, and it was not fulfilled until that minute piece of backstory was finally revealed to me.
All right, so clearly Belle is one of these people.
Look, don't get me wrong, though. I really like the Solo movie. Like, I do like it. I'm making, you know.
No, but I do remember that was, like, you. I think, if I'm remembering correctly, you were in that camp of, like, do we really need the origin of all these little doodads and whatnot? Here's my thing. In this one, with the jacket, I thought that was precious. I love the fact that it was connected with her sister. And I love the scene where she's like, oh, so many pockets. You know, it's so cool. I was like, oh my gosh, I love this woman.
Well, I think that's where it works, right? Like, you know, there's instances where it works and there's instances where it doesn't. Like, you know, if Han Solo had like a patch on his jacket or something like that, you know, or maybe, I don't know, like some, if there's some weird cutesy way to sort of like, you know, show the stripes on his pants. You know, that's not something that, like, you know, is like fundamental and like, you know, a big part of his character, but it's a nice little backstory kind of thing, right?
I mean, the dice are the same way, but okay, all right.
I guess. I don't know. Sometimes movies do things that work, and sometimes, you know, movies will do the same things and they don't work. And I agree with you on this one. I think that was mainly it was probably Florence Pugh's, you know, performance, and, you know, oh, yeah. The pockets jokes, as you mentioned and stuff, that made it work better.
So but, cool. I just use it for everything. Like, I loved her, man. Loved her so
she
much.
She was wonderful.
I'm excited about her being either the new Black Widow or the new White Widow. We don't really quite know exactly what's in her future. We're about to talk about that for sure. But I want to mention one other thing before getting into the specific characters here. And that is that this movie fits so well into the timeline, like really solidly, and actually, like, I guess not necessarily fixes, but does kind of take the opportunity to explain things that I never really noticed needed to be explained before. Like, okay, so we just finished, like literally just finished a rewatch of the MCU with my kids. And when this movie came out, we were literally in the right moment for where this falls in the timeline. And it's so solid. I mean, it fits like a glove. But at the end of it, when, like, dude who knows how on earth he got a Quinjet, but regardless, when dude shows up with a Quinjet, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot that we never, like, that they just kind of showed up with a Quinjet in Infinity War and nobody ever really questioned it. Like, it doesn't make sense that they would have one, but, you know, I mean, they're the Avengers, right? Like, you just assume they got one. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was interesting how that worked out.
Yeah. 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 You know, and I think it would have been nice to have it, you know, as that movie, because, like, I liked Ant-Man and the Wasp. I thought that was a pretty neat film. You know, stuff about Goliath aside, I know that's one thing you didn't like about it.
I still don't. When I rewatch that movie, I'm like, why did they make Goliath?
But, I mean, so, well, okay. Well, actually, I guess that one probably doesn't. Because that came after Infinity War.
Ant-Man and the Wasp makes sense, too. Because, obviously, in Endgame... Ant-Man plays, you know, a crucial role, a critical role.
Yeah.
In that film. And actually, I mean, like, goodness, like, I mean, you know, without spoiling Loki or anything else, I mean, if you look at what's going on in the MCU right now, I mean, the quantum realm in general is kind of that's the next frontier, right? Like, that's kind of setting up everything that's going on right now. And one imagines between Doctor Strange and Spider-Man and, you know, Ant-Man Quantumania. Yeah, that's it's an important, such a weird thing to say. It's an important movie, Belle. It's an important Ant-Man and the Wasp is an important movie.
Yeah, well, I gotta rephrase what I was trying to say, because, like, Black Widow still wouldn't have fit there. It would have been nicer to have that immediately after Civil War in between.
Yes.
Endgame, not Endgame.
It works great, though. I will say this. Ross is showing his age.
Yeah.
pretty hard.
They didn't really try to de-age him.
Well, and I mean, it's only been a few years, so maybe it would have been insulting to even, like, you know, be like, hey, buddy, we got this de-aging software, and we're gonna use it on you. He's like, oh, what do you mean? This was like 3 years ago, right? It was just 3 years ago. It's like, yeah. But we were thinking, you know, what if maybe you just had plastic surgery or something like that? Like, that doesn't make any sense. It's just 3 years ago. I look exactly the same.
Yeah, you do. Sure. You do. So speaking of de-aging technology, it is remarkable how far it's come. Mm. Christy and I watched X-Men X3. Because we skipped that one. We skipped that one on when I was kind of taking her through the old Marvel movies. We watched X-Men and X2, and then we watched First Class, Days of Future Past, Dark Phoenix.
Because
she had seen Logan like without any context of that history, and so, you know, I wanted to kind of show her all the history of that universe. And then finally last night I was like, I kind of explained it to her, like, there was a third X-Men movie in that original trilogy, but we don't really talk about that one because technically it never happens. With all the movies that you've seen, it never happens.
But see, I feel like that movie is made better by Days of Future Past in particular, because it's the clear indication that, like, the timeline has been changed and everything else. So, you know, I mean, on its own, it was awful, especially when we thought that was the end of the X-Men franchise. But yeah.
Like, you know, Charles Xavier's dead, you know, and Jean Grey's dead. Like, all the X-Men are dead, basically. And right. But so we never watched that. When we finally went back, and like, she was like, OK, yeah, I see what you're talking about now.
Yep. But yeah, so the de-aging technology has certainly come a long way.
Dude, Magneto and Professor X look like plastic, like Madame Tussaud melted wax. It's awful.
They're like a Pixar character. Oh, man.
They had like so much Botox in their face that they couldn't make facial expressions without like that. Dude, Uncanny Valley all the way.
Yeah, they didn't de-age what's his face for this, right? Like when the Crimson Guardian or the Red Guardian, like when he was in the, what was it, 84? When are the 90s? When were they in the America?
I think it was the 80s or 90s.
That sounds, I can't remember the specifics there.
I think
yeah,
it'd be the 90s. Like, depending on how old, like based on how old she was, it'd probably be the 90s.
Yeah, I think early 90s, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, so they were in this deep undercover situation, kind of the Russian spies living amongst Americans. Man, okay, so this movie, like that opening sequence too, and just the relationship with the girls was, you know, as a girl dad, right? Like as a dad of daughters here, like especially just the age difference between the two and the age of the characters, I was just like, oh, this is hitting kind of hard right now, especially. Dude, when the youngest was saying, like, that was, like, I didn't know we were spies. Because, of course, she didn't know. Like, that was, you know, all the fake photos they took and everything else. Like, that was a massive holiday for her. Like, I don't know, just the trauma of that lived experience, not let alone the Red Room, but even just, like, the family that you have is a lie.
Yeah.
Is just, ooh. Man, there was some heavy stuff in this movie.
Yeah.
Yelena. Sorry, I was trying to find her name. But, yeah, Yelena. I got to remember, because I love her. She's one of my new favorite introductions in kind of this next phase of the MCU.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, like you know, it's because but by that point, Natasha had already been through the Red Room.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it was a completely different scenario for her versus her sister, right? And like, yeah, like that sort of plays out at the rest of the movie when they're, you know, having their homecoming and whatnot, which yeah. I thought was pretty cool.
What even just the way that they connect, you know, the way in which they kind of deal with their memories. Natasha's very kind of, you know, she's like, you know, mentally divorced herself from that experience. And, you know, it was all a lie and, you know, who cares and yada, yada, yada. But for Yelena, who was much younger, that was her family. And that, you know, even though that she's, you know, mad and kind of hates her, you know, pseudo dad, you know, she also loves him and looks for that acceptance. And, you know, the memories that they shared were real and the affection that they had for each other was real. Yes, it was a job, but just because you're on a job doesn't mean that you don't care for the people that you work with. And then on top of that, you know, it was so bizarre. like seeing them interact, especially at the family dinner. And this was one of those movies, man, where like the magic happens in those like sweet moments. Like the action was great, sure. But like the magic really happens when everybody kind of gets, you know, sits still and kind of shares a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I will say that the last act, the action kind of like was a little distracting and ridiculous. I mean, it was
okay.
Real cool.
All right. Well, all right. All right. You gonna be one of these guys? Okay,
well, no, it's rule of cool, right? You know, like there's explosions and they're falling and fighting through the air and stuff like that. And yeah, okay, rule of cool, whatever. But like there's so much other stuff in there that was that we saw when there wasn't action going on that really built the movie up, right? And I'm not saying that the end of it ruined it or anything like that. I it was a bit much. And kind of ridiculous at a lot of the parts in the end of the movie.
It didn't bother me. While I was watching, I was like, well, you know, she's a superhero. And it did kind of, it felt a little Zack Snyder-y, if I could kind of go there. Like, if you look at like...
There wasn't enough rain. What are you talking about?
or lightning or freeze frames. Yeah. or people singing Hallelujah. Thing is, though, no, what I mean is that, like, if you go back and rewatch Watchmen, like, I remember watching that movie and being taken out by the fact that they were doing, like, all of these, like, super heroic, like moves and, like, the way they punch things broke in ways that, like, a human shouldn't be able to break them. And I'm like, well, that's not Dr. Manhattan. They're just, you know, that's Night Owl or that's, you know, Silk Spectre. Like, they're just, like, part of the charm of these characters is they're supposed to just be human. And I was like, well, I guess Zack Snyder's like, well, no, they're superheroes. And therefore, we kind of allow them to be able to do things that us mere mortals can't, even if they are mere mortals. Batman, you know, shouldn't be like, you know, in Dark Knight Rises, he shouldn't be able to have his back punched and suddenly it's not broken anymore. But he's a superhero, so we're fine with it. You know what I mean?
Look, no, his spine was just dislocated. All he had to do was just, you know, hold himself up and have somebody kick him in the spine.
It happens all the time.
Look, yep. You know.
Yeah. All Bane had to do was just pick him up and then flip him back the other way. That's how spinal surgery works. Yeah, but in Russia, in Soviet Russia, a plane crashes you.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. No, it worked out. I thought it was fine. It didn't bother me as much as it seemed to bother other people. I remember because people were talking about that afterwards. I was like, oh yeah, I guess the likelihood of her surviving all of that is kind of low when you think about it. But who comes into one of these movies to think about it like that? Like, you know,
well,
like,
I mean, she's not dying. You know, like that's the thing is the stakes are already. You know, set, right? Because yeah. You know nothing's going to happen to Black Widow because you've seen her in a movie chronologically that happens after it, right? So, like, there are zero stakes there. The only real stakes that you have are for some of the other characters. And so, you know, yeah, nobody's expecting anything to happen to Black Widow. Or if it does, you know it's going to be resolved by the end of the film.
And see, that's the thing. I think when they do, and this is true of other kind of prequels that Marvel does as well, they've made... such a big name for themselves in telling movies that that connect the universe and change the universe. Winter Soldier was huge because of the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know what
yeah,
I mean? Like
yeah.
In Endgame, like, you know, or in Infinity War, obvious, but even in Endgame starting off with 5 years later, like this instant communication of like, no, we're committing. Like this, we wrote a big check at the end of Infinity War and we are cashing it. Yeah. We're going to fix some stuff. But we're not going to like, it's not going to just magically all go away. Like there's going to be repercussions. So the universe is changed in these movies that does give you a kind of a sense that even if you believe or assume that the title character is going to survive, the universe may never be the same. And whenever they go back in time, and this was the same problem that we ran into with Captain Marvel, but like the stakes suddenly become way lower because we know they can't change too terribly much. By beyond just like light retconning. And so the movies kind of tend to suffer from that. I'm looking forward to for example, a Captain Marvel movie that now takes place in the modern timeline. So now it can actually have impact on what's going on in the world and be more than just like, hey, here's a character. Yeah. Remember this is like a movie from the late 90s, early 2000s. Remember how we used to tell movies like that? Here's one. And this kind of also feels like that as well at times, but
yeah.
This one, it fits more snugly than the other. It just doesn't have that, you know, that anything could happen-ness.
Yeah, like, yeah, and I agree. You know, that's the problem, right? Is the only thing you can really do, like, in Captain Marvel's case, you can't really significantly change anything because nobody knew about her or any of that other stuff except for, like, Nick Fury when she was around, and then she left to go patrol the cosmos, right? And so that's why she's gone. So they kind of explain that. So the only thing they can really, really do is just establish her backstory in a way that it doesn't impact anything else in the established continuity. Yeah. And so, you know, it's the same kind of thing here. It's like we can flesh out some things in Nat's backstory that we haven't told yet, like Budapest, right? Like they can do Budapest. They can talk about that. They can, you know, expand on the red in her ledger. That was a big thing. It's like, what is this red in her ledger? And so you can do these kinds of things that are small little bits that really kind of, you know, add some stuff to her character, explain some stuff about her character that, I mean, you know, do they need to be explained? I don't know. Did I have fun during the movie? Yeah. So, you know, take that for what it is, but you know, you can't have, you know, Black Widow going back in time or like traveling the multiverse or like doing anything like that, right? You know, it won't work in the context of where the movie and when the movie takes place.
Right. It would feel way off. Let's talk about Melina, I believe, the mom. She was terrifying.
Yeah, Rachel Weisz, haven't seen her in a movie in a long time.
Yeah, that was, you know, she was an interesting character because obviously, you know, we see her, there is kind of a maternal nature to her. I mean, I guess that's true of, you know, just the family unit in general, is they feel very much like a modern for the time family living up in America. But then we ran into her and she's literally torturing pigs. Like she's got a cage of small animals and she is mentally controlling them to the point where they suffocate themselves. And then we just don't talk about it.
Yeah, you know, she's a Soviet scientist.
No, I get it. Like, that's the thing. And it's so bizarre because I think it hammers in, I mean, all these characters. I mean, like, you know, with the dad as well, with Alexei. He's like, my daughters, the streets run red with the blood of my daughters. It's like, I am so proud of all the people that you've killed for Mother Russia.
Maybe you can be proud of other things. Maybe not all the murders.
Yeah, no, it you get that like very dysfunctional family where it's like, oh, dad with the politics again. You know, like there's a lot going on there that is oddly relatable in some ways. So it's kind of interesting.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, Matt, so we need to talk about the Taskmaster in the room. I don't know if you've been on the internet since this movie came out, but there was a little bit of controversy on a bit of a Mandarin-esque twist to the villain here. Let me just ask you this first. What was your knowledge of Taskmaster going into this movie?
You know, like a super soldier guy can replicate abilities of different things, you know, has kind of been like a, you know, an Avengers villain, sort of a little bit of limited knowledge here and there. I'm not like getting Taskmaster tattoos or, you know, buying Taskmaster t-shirts or anything like that. So, yeah, like, I knew he was a villain. I knew he could replicate abilities. I've seen him interact with Deadpool a couple times. That's about it.
There you go. All right, so you actually knew more than I did from that standpoint. I knew a villain could replicate, could, like, see somebody do some stuff and then do it themselves, which makes him a pretty good hand-to-hand fighter. That is literally the extent that I knew of this. The character, I'm not saying that the character's not more than that. Clearly, he's got a relatively pseudo extensive. I mean, I think that a lot of people have blown out of proportion the extent that Taskmaster is that important to, you know, the Marvel 616 universe. Regardless, I remember the commercials, like the trailers for this movie coming out. And I was like, how are they going to make Black Widow, like, exciting at this stage in the game? Like, post Infinity War and Endgame, how are we going to go back in time and get excited? Who is she going to fight where it's going to feel like there's, you know, something of interest there? And I, you know, we saw the trailers. We're like, oh, it's Taskmaster. Replicates abilities we see in the trailer. Okay, that's the shield. That's the Black Panther move. Like, okay, this is cool. It's almost like, you know, Black Widow versus the Avengers to some extent, or at least the ones, you know, that aren't gods and aliens, like the ones that it can actually, you know, kind of, she can go toe to toe with. And I was like, that is a great premise. That's a cool premise. And I got to tell you, Belle, I felt very satisfied because that's exactly what we got. We got her going up against a character that has all the, you know, structural abilities of the Avengers, is able to call forth their moves, use a lot of things. I do wish they would have leaned a little bit more into that. As opposed to it just being something kind of cool that we were watching, it would be awesome if there was a little bit more of, you know, just an acknowledgement that she's having to fight essentially her old family, or the kind of the collective abilities of her old family or of her new family while with her old family. And I think that could have been something cool there, but it's not necessary.
Well, I mean, obviously it wasn't necessary because that's what you picked up on. I'm assuming that's what they're trying to put forward with it, is like, you know, you very clearly see who Taskmaster was imitating in various parts of the fight scene.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah, absolutely. Well, like, no, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, so it's clear that that's what's happening, but I don't know that that was like a character beat for Black Widow. You know what I mean?
No, and I didn't think it needed to be. Like, I think it was kind of understood or implied in that. Like, it didn't, we didn't have to have a 5-minute exposition scene of her going, oh, it's like I'm fighting my family, the Avengers, with my new family, the Soviet Avengers. Yeah. It was there. It just, you know, it wasn't like a big thing, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And that's fine. But, you know, it just is what it is. Okay, so here's the deal. People are mad because this obviously is not the Taskmaster from the comics. You know, the fact that also we find out there's a gender bending nature to the reveal also seems to upset some people on the internet from time to time. You know, obviously this is, you know, we're also the Flash TV Talk podcast. We are used to villains, especially being completely reimagined. I think honestly, I would argue that most of us should be from the day one after, or rather in Iron Man, in the original Iron Man, Nick Fury comes onto the stage and it's Samuel L. Jackson, and nobody complained that it was the ultimate version of Nick Fury rather than the 616 version of Nick Fury. We know that these are different and reimagined characters. So I was a little confused why so many people were so upset by this reveal. There were people comparing this to the Mandarin, and I feel like that is not the same thing, because the Mandarin, the movie lied to us and kind of tricked us into who we were dealing with the Mandarin. This movie never tricked us into believing that Taskmaster was anybody other than just Taskmaster, this kind of super killer. And when the reveal comes off that it's Dracoff's daughter, it fits well with the storyline and with Natasha's storyline in particular. So I don't know. I just want to say, I don't fully understand kind of the pushback that came from kind of the change up of Taskmaster. It doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. I certainly don't believe that it's the same thing as Mandarin.
No, it's nothing like Mandarin. And I can't believe we're still having this conversation, you know? It's like...
Well, in all fairness, it's because we're like, what, 5 weeks late to the conversation?
well, true, yeah. But, you know, it's like, oh, Heimdall was cast by, you know, they cast Idris Elba for Heimdall.
I remember that.
You know, like you said, nobody cared about Sam Jackson being Nick Fury. You know, he looks nothing like the regular Nick Fury. He's the Ultimates one. But I guess maybe at that, you know, there was no complaint there because literally the Ultimates Nick Fury is based off of Sam Jackson. So,
I mean, I guess that's really what it comes down to. If it's in ink first, then the fan, you know, fans will.
It's been 10 years we've had these characters, and they're not exactly the same as their comic book counterparts, you know, in every single way. And so, like, why are we still expecting them to do that? Like, I don't, like, why can't we go into this movie and say, oh, Taskmaster, let's see their interpretation of Taskmaster.
Well, and I think that's the thing, right? Like, this is like they also kind of set it up that Taskmaster could theoretically be anybody, right? And so, you know, if people are just that absolutely tied to that character, they could always bring it back. I just don't know. You know, there was an outcry of like, this dude's the Mandarin? Really? Which felt like just awful. Like, there's just so much about like that whole Killian going, I am the Mandarin. And I'm like, no, man, if anything, you're like Fing Fang Foom right now, but you are not the Mandarin. yeah. And so now what Marvel has been able to do is kind of go back to the drawing board from all appearances with Shang-Chi and, you know, get the Mandarin right, so to speak. So if there is enough pushback and if there is enough desire to see the original character, one imagines we'll see that original character. It doesn't mean that, you know, I don't know. I just think that what they did works. And I disagree with the pushback that it got.
Yeah, we need to remember that we're in the context of the MCU here. Like, this isn't the early part of the MCU. This is a well-established cinematic universe. And so when you look at things, look at it in the context of this. Does it work in the context of the story? Does it work in the context of Black Widow's story? Which it did on both of those counts, right? Like, this was the red in her ledger. She thought she killed Dracov's daughter. No, Dracov's daughter's Taskmaster. Now she has to literally deal with the red in her ledger by, you know, fixing that, right? By, like, you know, giving her the dust and, like, you know, she doesn't want to kill the person that she's already killed who made her change sides in the first place, kind of thing, you know. So, like, it works well for her story. It worked well for the movie. I don't understand why it's such a big deal that everything has to be exactly the same as the comic. I mean, was it because Taskmaster was a girl? Was it because it was I don't know. Like, I don't understand the complaints. I don't understand. Like, it's an established cinematic universe. Go into the movie thinking that things are going to be different, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then be like, awesome, they did this one thing from the comics. That's super cool. Oh, they didn't do everything from the comics. Okay, whatever, that's fine. But, like, you know, the things that you do get from the comics, like, that are exactly word for word from the comics, cherish those because those are neat. But, like, this is a different universe. It's a different medium. It's not going to be exactly the same. So stop going into movies with those expectations.
Yes. And how dare you, says Bell. Dracov himself. Interesting character. Not a so subtle Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
I mean, right? Because, like, played by Ray Winston, and Ray Winston does not look like Harvey Weinstein, but he definitely does in this movie. You know what I mean?
And he also has a very hard time not letting his really thick British accent come through.
yeah. Do we need to talk about the accents here? We cannot
it's like
say
I'm
anything.
A British. I'm a British Russian guy.
I think I did see one really, really good commentary that pointed out that, like, this movie is filled by non-Russian characters playing or non-Russian actors playing Russian characters, and the only actual Russian in this movie is Taskmaster, and she has no lines. So.
Well, she also had a very, very important part on set, and that was to, like, you know, help them correct their, you know, awful Russian accents.
Oh, well, there you go. What? Don't put that on her. What are you talking about?
And she had a very, very hard job. And
she's like, no, don't put that on me. They no, they're not listening.
Like, I tried so hard.
I am so sadly sorry. Don't send me back home to Mother Russia.
Yeah.
they have rejected me there. Putin has my name on a list. It's tragic. Anyway, okay, well, there you go. What else, man? Any other thoughts about Black Widow in the various characters that we saw in this movie?
I really liked Red Guardian. I think there is an opportunity for some kind of story between who he actually fought, because Captain America was still frozen in the 80s or whenever it was he was saying that he fought Captain America, and whether or not that ties into the super soldiers like we saw in Falcon and Winter Soldier, how there were still super soldiers in action around there, and if he fought one of them. I think there's some really interesting backstory that we could explore. Nothing that needs a feature length film, but maybe like a What If kind of thing, or just like an animated, which by the way, the animation of What If is astounding. I've seen the first episode and I love it. And
I just saw the second episode, and man, when you get to the 10-minute mark, it is going to
I think there's some really neat stuff there. I liked Red Guardian. I thought he was really cool. I liked Melina. I liked their little family. I loved Yelena. I can't wait to see more of her. It looks like she's going to be in this, with U.S. Agent, and it's not the Dark Avengers that they're doing.
Dark Avengers, Thunderbolts, Hammer.
Thunderbolts, yeah.
There's a lot of different kind of like evil teams they could go with. So let's talk about this. So the end credit scene, of course, she's visiting Black Widow's grave. Of course, we do get... Madame Hydra. Should we just go with Madame Hydra?
No, it's Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine.
So Madame Hydra, played by... played by Elaine here, is like rolling around and collecting all of these like off-brand heroes, right? Like she's putting together the off-brand adventure.
Yeah, she is putting together when you're driving home from the grocery store and you say, Mom, I want some Avengers, and your mom says, we have Avengers at home. She's putting together the Avengers at home team.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right, Mel. Oh man. When we get the whole set, there needs to be a t-shirt that's the Avengers at home. That's great, man. Yes, that is exactly what she is doing. Although I will say, this lines up nicely because we do know that we've got a Hawkeye series coming up. Do you feel that they're kind of setting up Yelena to be a potential villain in the Hawkeye series?
See, that's what I don't know. I'm of two minds about it. Like either she's going to play a part in stage five. Like so are the shows going to be interconnected in a way like the original four phases were? And the original four phases built up to Thanos, and we resolved that story. Now we have the shows. One thing that I'm kind of surprised is we didn't see Val show up in WandaVision. Could we see New Vision there? And so like that's the thing. It's like, so all these characters are kind of being like pulled off of their shows by Val. And is this going to end up in a conclusion in a show, or will this end up in a conclusion in a movie? And I'm inclined to believe that all of this is going to be, while it will impact the greater Marvel universe, we'll probably see a Vision movie again. We'll probably see, things like that. We'll see Captain America as Sam Wilson in the movies. But I'm thinking like it's too much, right? Like you don't want to overwhelm your audiences by saying, "Oh, you didn't watch 8 seasons of like 6 different shows."
But see, I don't think like Loki's really the first time that we actually have a season 2 of one of these things. You know what I mean? Like we never got like a confirmation that like Captain America and the Winter Soldier are going to be a season 2 of that show. I really think that basically that was a bridge from Endgame to, Captain America 4.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
And like Loki, I mean, it's interesting. It's very interesting that Loki's getting a season 2. That is surprising to me.
Yeah, because Loki seems way more primed to set off, Spider-Man No Way Home, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness and Quantumania, right? Like because those
and
seem
what
to,
if and what if
and what if, yeah. So like it seems
which
to,
I think honestly, man, I think that so I would say that all of these things are interconnected in a pretty deep way. I don't think movie or Disney Plus series, I don't think there's going to be a tier of what's more important than the other. I just think that I don't think they're going to oversaturate it. I don't think we're going to have 8 seasons. We know we're not getting 8 seasons of WandaVision. That was a one-off deal. And I don't know. I would be shocked if we got a season 3 of Loki. Because that movie, like we might, but I doubt it. And if we do, it's spiraling out into kind of its own thing that it might end up being on a sub-tiered, perhaps. But I don't know. At this point, it's the most important. It's the most critical piece of the entire universe.
Yeah, like it fits well. I agree with you what you're saying there with Falcon and Winter Soldier being a bridge to Captain America 4. That makes sense. And WandaVision being kind of a bridge to bring Wanda back in, or to bring Vision back into the MCU, and to give Wanda like a new kind of story to go on with her solo film if she gets one. Yeah, but Loki is like this Kang, right? Kang the Conqueror, he's there, he's coming, and that's going to be our big bad for the new phase, right?
Yeah, I mean, from all accounts, it's a fun time, man. It's an exciting time in the MCU. It is wild though, because if you look at these two different tracks, you've got the Avengers at Home kind of building in the background, and then you've got Kang building in the background. And so one does imagine we could be building into kind of a, you know, I mean, I don't think people have been calling them the Thunderbolts, and maybe that's the case. To me, it does feel a lot more like a Dark Avengers. And so I would assume they wouldn't call themselves the Dark Avengers for obvious reasons. But at the same time, I don't know. I think that there's the universe is primed for this, you know, kind of taking the baseline concept of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which is, you know, can the public get behind these, you know, new Avengers after we've kind of lost the other ones? Or what if we had, you know, like, or, you know, can the U.S. government create a superhero team that they control? If you think back, you read The Ultimates, right?
No.
Okay, so Ultimates, great, great series. Volume 1 and Volume 2 in particular. And in it, the Avengers are the Ultimates, as they're known in that universe. Oh, they might call it the Ultimates, actually, in the movie world. But yeah, because in that universe, they're not known as the Avengers, they're known as the Ultimates. And I think they actually end up changing it in Ultimates Volume 3. But on that team, they are very much a tool of the United States government. They are like a hardcore, like, you know, SEAL Team 6 type of group of super individuals. They get them good PR, but then they can also go through and, you know, annihilate a small country. And they do, like, they completely, like, disrupt governments across the world. And so it's very possible that they're really trying to put together a team more like that, in the wake of, you know, the public kind of looking at these newer versions of characters they know and like, oh, you're not Steve Rogers. Well, you're not Natasha Romanoff. You know what I mean? Like, there's an opportunity for a Dark Avengers to kind of rise from this. So it's an interesting concept, but when you've got Kang out there reworking yeah. the multiverse, it does kind of make you wonder, like, which one of these major threats should we be following here? Because one is like a small major threat, and one is like a cosmic major threat.
Yeah, well, I think that bodes well for the future of the MCU, because you don't want your first Avengers movie to be this like universe breaking event, right? And so maybe your first Avengers movie of the new phases that we have out here is going to be something on a smaller scale with, you know, maybe it's like Avengers versus Thunderbolts or Avengers versus Dark Avengers kind of thing. And then we build up to that. And then like at the end, you know, when we have our Avengers Assemble thing, it's like the two teams come together to fight this cosmic threat.
Yeah, there's probably something to that. I know there was a desire to see possibly villains returning in Endgame or something of that nature to try to like pack out the team. And so that, you know, Thanos is so huge of a villain that even the other villains have to rise up. And I mean, that's, you know, DC Comics does that kind of thing all the time, right? Like Lex Luthor and Superman have to team up because, you know, Brainiac shows up. There's some sort of like cosmic threat that kind of puts a pause to the traditional hero versus villain and, you know, having to come together. So there's a lot there. Yelena, I'm never going to buy her as a villain, though, because she's precious. And like if I was Russian father, I'd be so proud of all the roads that run red with the blood she has slashed.
Well, but I think that's the trick here. I don't think they're going to go for like the comic style version of it where it's they're actually villains who are masquerading as heroes. I think they're probably going to go with a more like these are anti-heroes.
Right.
And yeah. there's a vacuum here, a power vacuum here.
They've done such a good job of laying the groundwork. I'm excited, man. I'm excited to see where that goes. But my guess is they'll, you know, I don't know. we'll just have to see. We're going cosmic. We're going cosmic on the big screen, and it looks like we're going kind of Dark Avengers on the small screen, but we'll see where it all lays out. All right, man. Any other thoughts before we wrap it up? Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. Should have probably happened earlier, but there are reasons for that.
Yeah.
And yeah, overall, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really nice end to Black Widow's legacy in the MCU, and a really great jumping off point for Yelena. I can't wait to see more of her. Yeah, like I'm looking forward to the future.
I guess I'm going to give it a 4 stars out of 5 for me. Honestly, I think The only thing that this movie really suffers from, in my opinion, is not coming out when it should have. But it does fit so well into the timeline. When you go back and rewatch the Marvel movies, watch this one accordingly in the point in the timeline where it belongs. Even though that after, the after credits kind of throws it off, and just skip it. Skip it.
Yeah. Like, when you eventually, I'm probably going to do another rewatch. We kind of like bounce around and watch Marvel movies, just every now and again. But like, if we ever do sit down and do a complete rewatch of everything, I'm certainly going to put sometimes we'll do like chronological rewatches, and those are always fun. And so definitely going to put this in chronological order when we go back and do a rewatch.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things we do actually with Captain Marvel too, is we always skip the end credits. Cause that's the second one, if I'm remembering correctly, in the timeline.
Cause there's the first Avenger.
Right.
And then there's Captain Marvel, and then I think we start with Iron Man, and then that's Hulk, right. And then Iron Man 2, and then Thor, and so on and so forth.
Which is cool when you think about it, because then you got Nick Fury, like, plays, like, a massive role in, like, in all the setting up of the original Avengers. Then he kind of, like, chills out in the background and hangs out with Skrulls in space for a while.
Yeah,
he'll be back.
Yeah.
All right, well, there you go. That's our Black Widow discussion review, what have you. Yes, a little bit late to the game, but hey, we had some Flash to talk about. But we got some big things coming up here over the summer, and I guess the summer's summer's actually over.
Yeah,
we got some big things coming up here during the break, the hiatus. Everything's all weird because of schedule, and kind of a big announcement coming down the way in the coming weeks, so stay tuned for all of that. Follow Bell at Ring That Bell. You can follow us at flashtvtalk.com or tvtalk.fm for all the latest and greatest, and all that kind of good stuff is there. Also at Flash TV Talk on Twitter. That's going to do it for us for this week. But for me, for Bell, for Bell's mom.
Hi, Mom.
In Soviet Russia, we say goodbye to you.
Or wait, they would say goodbye to us? I don't know. Bye, everybody.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.